First impressions aren't the most important thing. They're the only thing. At Ernie's Print Shop, we'll produce what you need to represent your company professionally. Right now, you can get 1,000 full-color business cards, 1,000 4x6 postcards, or a 3x5 banner for just $60. You choose. Check us out at erniesprintshop.com. Ernie's Print Shop. Over 50 years, one source, one solution. erniesprintshop.com. 502-969-8585.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email myviewmatters@aol.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound investment.
So, I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
And welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Ed Springsteen Show, brought to you by the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. We can go for all the latest podcasts of this show or any other stories or investigations we've got going on, as well as EdSpringsteen.com. We do our own little personal analysis, if you will. While you're at either of those websites, please do us a favor. Join the email newsletter. Our email newsletter will be delivered direct to your inbox on a weekly or a monthly basis. We don't do the daily spam thing you got so used to. And join the RSS feed as well, so we can make sure that the podcast gets sent direct upon completion of the shows. If you're so inclined, you like what we do, we thank you for that, but we also can always use help. It's your generosity that keeps everything alive at LouisvillePolitics.com and right here at the MVM Radio Show. We have donate buttons and GoFundMe page up as well at LouisvillePolitics.com and EdSpringsteen.com. Any donation is greatly appreciated. Now on with the show. Phone numbers, as always, 858-683-1326 or 502-805-0334. For you folks in the listening queue, please hit that number one on your dial pad. We certainly want to hear from you. And for everybody else, the live chat is open. You can sign in right here at BTR. You can sign in using your Facebook and Twitter accounts. So there's all kinds of ways to get heard. We definitely want to hear from you. I tell you, it's been an interesting, few days. It's been an interesting week, really. Last Tuesday was not as much of a surprise to some of us as it was to others. We've had a lot of fallout since then on all the different scenarios shaping up, even right here in Kentucky. Former Louisville Mayor for Life Jerry Abramson, who was ran out of a job because he thought that Louisville's problems were because we had poor old black people. Yes, we outed that story at EdSpringsteen.com. We were the exclusive on it. Is now going to Washington. He is going to be the liaison, if you will, for intergovernmental affairs, focusing on local and state governments for Barack Obama. The translation is, he didn't do anything in Kentucky. We need to get him the hell out of Kentucky, so let him go to Washington and play with the president. You can take that in any way you want to. As we know, it's a scandal after scandal. Mark Jerry Abramson right here in Louisville. John David Dice, I think, did an excellent job talking about this today. You can go to WDRB.com to read that story. Everything from MSD being grossly abused by Jerry Abramson, Department of Neighborhoods fabricating invoices, head of his Department of Housing, Kimberly Button, pled guilty to official misconduct because she was using public money. All kinds of crazy things. And that's why, and when we threw in the poor, blacker, older stuff, that's why Jerry said, hey, you know what, I've had enough. I better get the hell out of Dodge. And he wouldn't even run for his last official term that he could go for. So bye-bye, Jerry. Not sorry to see you go. You and your little friend in Washington, and I don't mean Barack Obama, have a pretty good time while your wife's back here having friends of her own. In the meantime, according to Home Security Shield, yes, folks, there are reports out there that analyze data and tell us all kinds of things. The most dangerous city in Kentucky is Louisville, Kentucky. You betcha. This is something we've been telling everybody for a long time. You know, Greg Fisher and him are going out lying and hiding all the crime. This started under former Chief Robert White when they started trying to manipulate stats and reporting. You just can manipulate so much. Louisville is Kentucky's most dangerous city, and we wonder why we can't get jobs. It's really interesting when you look at this because Louisville is the economic engine of the state. And we have been running on five cylinders out of eight, if you will, for quite some time. We may be the economic of the state, but we are also still a dependent, if you will, of the government. In other words, we take back more than we ever give in taxes, so we're welfare poor as well. That ought to tell you something about the Democratic hold and the liberal left's hold on politics here in Louisville and Kentucky overall for the last, 100 years? So it's very disturbing because we should be better than that, and we haven't been able to be better than that because of the liberal left and the ones who make all the decisions. And, of course, they maintained power last week in the election. Ironically, Kentucky really didn't have any gains at all in getting conservative gains while the rest of the nation did quite well. At this point, all of the Senate seats nationally have been filled except one. Louisiana has a runoff on December the 6th. And, so we've now have a 53-46 Republican majority in the Senate. And it's looking very good that there may be 54. Senator Mary Landrieu, who's been in there for 20 years now, is 5 points behind her opponent, House of Representatives candidate. I believe his name is Larry. But anyway, we look at all of these things in play, and I'm still confused and puzzled by the fact that we can't get ahead. Why Kentucky can't move ahead? Well, now we have that chance. Let's see what we do with it. And let me tell you why. Larry Clark in the state house here in Kentucky had announced yesterday that he will not seek re-election as House Speaker pro tem. He has decided he's probably going to retire after this election, so he's not going to seek re-election. So that opens up the House to new leadership, which is pretty cool. You know, even if we do have to choose between nobodies, and in my opinion, right now, the two names that have been touted and said that they plan to run for the job is State Representative Denny Butler. He's a Louisville Democrat. He wastes of space. Denny Butler got elected because his last name is Butler, and that's a very prominent Democratic name here in Louisville. So Denny, I don't see as being ready for prime time in any leadership level. And then we've got Representative Dennis Keene. He's a Wilder Democrat. He said he plans to run for the job. We're going to do a little bit of research into Dennis Keene. But, I don't see a Louisville Democrat stepping up at the state level. So we lose a little bit losing Larry Clark. But we also lose, we really gain because we're losing the obstructionism. In my opinion, the unethical dealings of Larry Clark. In many cases, I believe there's been illegal dealings with Larry Clark. So I'm curious to see what that trade-off is going to be moving forward in January when the Kentucky House goes back in session. We also have another chance at moving Kentucky forward. Senator Mitch McConnell is now officially the new Senate Majority Elect. When the new Congress comes in January, Mitch will assume the majority leader position as expected. There was a closed-door meeting of the rank and file, so he was elected by acclamation. I prefer those meetings to be open. We continue to push for a transparent government, and if we're going to elect majority and minority leaders and everything else, I would really like those meetings to be open to the public, you know, broadcasted on a C-SPAN or something. Why not? Let's see who else puts their name in the hat. Let's see how this vote goes. and let's see the discussion going forward. We don't see that because it's all a power play behind the scenes. And I know that there was other people that ran against Mitch McConnell, but we won't know who and we won't know how close that vote was so that we can even see if the Republican Party is even united at this point. But since Mitch McConnell is from Kentucky, if we can say that after living 30 years in Washington, D.C., but here's the elected senator from Kentucky. He is now Senate Majority Leader. Let's see if he can do anything with that. Since this is probably his last term, from all indications, is Mitch McConnell going to do things in a bipartisan way? Is he going to make the Senate move forward, start making Congress accessible and working again? Or, since it's his last term, does he want his legacy to be to push and cram everything through that he could possibly ever have wanted and keep the, you know, the stagnation going on that we've become accustomed to? Those are questions we have to ask ourselves. Let's go to the phones real quick. I believe this is Paul. Paul, you're on the air.
Good evening. You punched a button already. I can't believe it. I just can't believe it.
Sitting man, I'm getting faster.
Just listening, and you've already punched a button.
Well, I'm getting faster. That's good. What's on your mind, man?
First of all, let me say that I am not, by any stretch of the imagination, a Mitch McConnell fan, okay? However, I don't believe Mitch McConnell deserves all the blame for the stagnation, as you called it. The liberal folks call it gridlock. I'll tell you what, Ed, anyone who uses those terms, whether they're referring to the Democrats or the Republicans, are absolutely not paying attention to the way this government was structured. A government was structured to make sure that you didn't have a whole bunch of bad legislation pass. And gridlock is certainly one way to keep bad legislation from happening, okay? Fact of the matter is, we have a really recent example, and it's huge, of when there wasn't any gridlock and we got a hold of a bad piece of legislation called Obamacare. So gridlock actually is part of the design of our constitutional form of government. And McConnell and crew, they clearly don't know how to spin stuff like that. And so they've been on the receiving end of what I consider to be an unfair tag. Okay. But, you know.
Well, let's be real clear here. Let's be real clear here. I never said that Mitch McConnell was a problem of stagnation. I said, is he going to be able to work in a bipartisan manner to eliminate the stagnation we've come to accept out of Congress? And when you look at that, that's very true. The person responsible for the stagnation or the gridlock in the Senate primarily is Harry Reid, and always has been. Harry Reid has only brought 39 bills to the table, including the bipartisan bills that have come to him from the House, including bills that were brought to him by his own Senate Democrats. Harry Reid is the obstructionist.
Right. Yep.
Right. And here's something else. If we're going to bring all of that up, that's great, because we're actually going to move it to another part of the story. And while you're here, I want to hear you on this, because if we need to prove that Mitch McConnell hasn't been the obstructionist, it's easy to prove just for the Senator Mary Landrieu down in Louisiana. As I mentioned at the very top of this, she's in a runoff right now. She's been there 20 years. But if you want to talk about bipartisanship, okay, Mary Landrieu is not a very good senator. And quite frankly, I hope that she does lose to Representative Cassidy. He's up by 5 points now going into the runoff. However, Mary Landrieu is also as frustrated as anybody else has been with Harry Reid. And one example of this is right now. All of a sudden, because Mary Landrieu, Democrat, the only Democratic senator left that hasn't been decided in Louisiana, okay, she has wanted to go forward with the Keystone Pipeline. I've got to give her credit for that. She wrote legislation for the Senate and sponsored legislation for the Senate for the Keystone Pipeline, and Harry Reid has buried that for the last 6 years and refused to bring it up. Now that the Republicans are taking over the majority of the Senate in January, and now that he needs as many seats as he could possibly save, and the only one left is Mary Landrieu, all of a sudden, miracle of all miracles, yesterday it was announced that the Democratic Senate is finally going to bring the Keystone Pipeline up for a vote. And it's all ahead of the December 6th runoff between Landrieu and Cassidy to try to attempt to save her seat, like she did something. The Democrats didn't care about the 40,000 jobs before now. Harry Reid didn't care about the 40,000 jobs until now. But now it's politics. It has to save a seat. So let's make sure we're clear there. I didn't blame Mitch McConnell for any of that. I'm just wanting to see if he can move beyond that bipartisanship that has gotten so damn bad over the last few years because of the failed leadership of Harry Reid. Is he going to be able to work in a bipartisan manner? And that we're going to have to wait and see. Go ahead.
Well, first of all, Mary Landrieu is she is a politician first and foremost. Secondly, the only reason she's getting any press today is because she is trying to save her butt. Okay, she doesn't give any more. She doesn't give a whit about any of the 40,000 jobs that you referred to. She only cares about getting reelected. So, and number three. One of the few things Republicans have done really wisely here recently is introduce that same bill, not necessarily her bill, but something very similar to it over in the House before she could get it to the Senate floor. Because as you pointed out, Harry Reid has been blocking all these bills that even his Democrat colleagues have been wanting to get out there. And so as a direct result of his obstructionism, Harry Reid's obstructionism, not Mitch McConnell's, Harry Reid's obstructionism, the Republicans are going to score some brownie points on this issue. They're
well, sure,
get
but
this
let's
thing introduced and passed in the House, and then it's going to come over to the Senate where what's going to happen?
The Senate has already said that they're going to listen to all of this, and they're finally going to talk about it. And just to be fair here, I think Senator Mary Landrieu is a waste of space. Okay, I don't care for her. I've never cared for her. But I also believe we've got to give credit where it's due. And quite frankly, she is the major sponsor, has been the major sponsor of the Senate version on the Keystone Pipeline for years. They just had Harry Reid has refused to allow it to move forward. Now, whether her plan is the plan that you know, whether everybody agrees to her plan or not, we have this kumbaya moment is irrelevant. But she has, in a bipartisan way, on the Keystone Pipeline issue, has in a bipartisan way said, yes, let's move this forward. And quite frankly, it's self-serving because she is in Louisiana, you know.
No.
So
yeah, it is self-serving because look. One of the things that our American history has absolutely been full of regarding senators and representatives is that there have been senators and representatives of both parties at various times throughout history that have stood up and taken a courageous stand. In other words, they have taken a stand that might be contrary to their political caucus's stand in an effort to move the country forward. Where's Mary Landrieu been for the last 6 years? Where's Mary Landrieu been? I don't recall the mainstream media giving her any kind of props for taking a courageous stand on the Keystone Pipeline. If that
I'm totally agreeing with you.
And she knows it's good. She should be out there beating her drums, telling everybody that, hey, and then putting the heat on Harry Reid. I don't
Ed. There's no doubt about that. I won't argue with you on that. You know, like I said, I don't think very highly of her. But just for the fact that she did sponsor that bill, you know, it was something in a bipartisan way. She should have led the way and held Harry Reid accountable, just like all the other Senate Democrats who are now crying today because Harry Reid has ruled the Senate with an iron fist when it should have been standing up and said, you know, you're gone. They're the ones who kept selecting him and keeping him majority leader, not us. Let's go back to the phones, Paul. I want you to stay on the air. You're still live. Ken Mollman, our good friend, our Libertarian Party chairman of Kentucky. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm doing good, Ed. Paul, how you guys doing?
Fantastic. I know you got some comments. I saw your little flag. What's up, brother?
Yeah, well, first of all, Keene. Dennis Keene's up in my neck of the woods up here in northern Kentucky. He's one of the last two Democrats standing in northern Kentucky, and he is kind of pretty much just your standard run-of-the-mill establishment Democrat, does what the party tells him to do, and, you know, how the party says to vote, he votes. That's pretty much his gig. So, you know, if you're looking for change, you're not going to get it there.
So more of the same. Larry Clark Jr. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Abramson, you mentioned something about, you know, Abramson moving out of state and all that. Are you familiar with what's called the Dilbert principle? Is that you promote the worst people up to get them out of the way so they do the least harm?
I did not know it was referred to the Gilbert principle, but we actually said that Monday night, just get him the hell out of the way. And just like I talked about then, the whole game plan is to bring Crit up to lieutenant governor, and Crit is going to spend the rest of Steve Beshear's term doing one thing and one thing only, campaigning for Jack Conway to be the next governor and campaigning for Steve Beshear's son, Andrew Beshear, to become the next attorney general. And we're paying for that with our tax dollars. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a lot of people, when I ran for state treasurer a few years ago and on the principle of getting rid of that office because it doesn't do anything and it doesn't. There's been some other folks that have been talking about trying to get rid of the lieutenant governor's office because it also has no officially assigned duty. Now, the difference there being is that the lieutenant governor actually does act on behalf of the governor. In other words, the governor says, Mr. Lieutenant Governor or Mrs. Lieutenant Governor, as the case may be, I want you to go out and talk to the folks in Eastern Kentucky about what we can do to lift them out of poverty and what we can do to replace coal, right? The governor can give the lieutenant governor tasks to do. It's just that they don't do that. And in part, it's because our lieutenant governor's candidates have not been necessarily some of the folks you'd actually want to put in charge of anything. But the point is that role actually could be used for something good. And not to toot the horn, but, you know, Chris McDaniel, who is running for lieutenant governor under Jamie Comer's ticket, I know Chris McDaniel personally. I went to high school with him. And that he's told me that that's their plan, is that he's going to be a working lieutenant governor that actually does stuff. That's what's going to set their ticket apart, is that they're actually going to have two people that you're actually going to elect and pay and actually have two people actually working.
Well, we both know how that's going to work. And you're right. The governor does assign tasks or has the responsibility to, if they so choose to, with the lieutenant governor. And Crit Llewellyn's assigned task is real simple. The people of Kentucky are paying right. taxes to have you as lieutenant governor, and your task is to go out and make sure that my son wins attorney general and Jack Conway wins the governorship. That's it. That's the only assignment she has. So she gets to go out and campaign as the lieutenant governor of Kentucky on behalf of them. Personally, I hope that Andrew Beshear crashes and burns just as bad as Alice in Wonderland Grimes did. And Jack Conway, I got news for you. If the Democrats are putting all their daggone money on Jack Conway, they have more problems than they think. Jack Conway has so much baggage, it is unbelievable. And he has failed at every level from all his campaign runs. I mean, he's run for the House, he's run for the Senate, you know, he's run for everything and not won anything except attorney general, which is basically a gimme job at a Democratic Party just to get him out of the way, if you will.
Attorney general is also an easier seat to win because it's a narrower field. You have to be an attorney. You can't just compete against everybody in that race. It's
right.
You've automatically narrowed the field. There was already a better shot because he was an attorney to win that.
Oh, I agree with you. It limits the amount of people who can run for the office. And quite frankly, Jack Conway, in my opinion, is a piss-poor attorney. I don't think he's a very good attorney at all. He has no ethics, in my opinion, whatsoever. To me, he's a waste of space that the taxpayers are paying for. His biggest claim to fame is, hey, gee, I went after the gas companies. You know, big deal. You kept your criminal Democrats, you know, in office. You protected your own brother and lied about and had ethical violations there in a drug bust. I mean, we've got some serious concerns about him, and I haven't even gotten to Aqua Buddha and the Rand Paul garbage he did. So, you know, there's a lot there. But, you know, on this national stage, so I really kind of want to ask this because there was a recent poll conducted by Gallup, all right? And according to the Gallup poll, 53% of Americans want the GOP in Congress to have more influence than Barack Obama when it comes to the nation's agenda. You know, we look at all of these things in play, and this was done after the elections. November 6th through November 9th was the time frame that Gallup did this poll on. They took a completely random sample of 828 people. You know, they sampled from every state, which is pretty good. But when we look at this, you know, the question was, who do you want to have more influence over the direction the nation takes in the next year, Barack Obama or the Republicans in Congress? 53% of the people who took the poll said they want the Republicans in Congress to take control, if you will. I like that. I like that because it tells me that America has realized – or is finally realizing that the leftist, liberal, quite frankly, in my opinion, communist way that Barack Obama is trying to take America into, everybody is clearly concerned about. You know, we put the mandate out there last Tuesday, November the 4th, when Republicans swept across the nation, except in Kentucky, where we're 20 years behind. And they followed that up in a Gallup poll just a few days later that said that 53% want the Republicans in Congress to take control. So here's the question. What is Congress going to do with that mandate? They know. The Republicans in Congress know about this poll. How are they going to read this? Are they going to read this that we need to move the country forward? Or are they going to read this the same way that they have typically done in the past, which is why they lost power in the first place, as a mandate that they can do whatever they want to do? And since you're both on the line, Paul, I want to hear from you first on that.
Anyone who believes that the Republicans are going to bolt out of the starting gate and take these issues and run with them at top speed, you need to go ahead and sit down and be ready for a more of a marathon rather than a sprint. Republicans, I don't believe, know how to tackle multiple big issues simultaneously. But in their defense, I don't know why they would want to. Stop and think about it strategically, guys. If you want to make a favorable impression, do you go after quantity or do you go after quality? And I think in this case here, they need to cherry pick some of these issues. They have got to the fact that they're getting out of the starting gate fairly quickly on this Keystone Pipeline thing, I think bodes well. But I'm telling you, they are going to be judged on the basis of one issue and one issue alone, that being the Unaffordable Care Act, which, by the way, I want to reiterate something that I mentioned to you earlier in the weekend. I got a notice yesterday that my health insurance rate, the portion that I have to pay, is going up next year 71%, all courtesy of the Unaffordable Care Act.
And you're not alone. 71%
increase in this upcoming year. So am I going to hold the Republicans accountable for any failure to deal with this Unaffordable Care Act mess? Damn straight, Skippy.
All right, fair enough. Ken, go ahead.
Well, I think this ties back to something you said. I think the tone has been set here with the way that McConnell was appointed to majority leader. You know, there was a story that came out a couple, 3 weeks ago about the leadership was going to be decided behind closed doors officially, you know, but that they would not stand for any desertion or disloyalty on the floor when it came to actually taking the vote. And if there was disloyalty, that the leadership would strip you of your committee. What that tells me is that the Republicans are going to come in with an agenda, and it's going to be a very strong agenda. The problem is that they're, once again, which is what led to their loss in the first place, going to be a very deaf agenda, and they're not going to be listening to anyone. They believe they have a mandate. I think they're going to overplay that mandate, and it's going to be interesting to see how badly they overplay that mandate. You know, McConnell and Rand have both said that they're not going to repeal Obamacare. I think a lot of people are very upset with Obamacare. You look poll after poll, it's over 50% want to repeal Obamacare. I think that would be a real smart thing to do. They've already said they won't do it. They've already laid the groundwork and taken tools away off the table, saying they're not going to shut the government down. They're not going to do certain things that already puts the bargaining chips on the wrong side of things. So I don't know exactly what their strategy is, but I can tell you if it's going back to the mess that we had from 2001 to 2007, when they had control the last time, they're going to find themselves out of a job faster than they did the last time. We had just had 6 years of Democrat control, or excuse me, 8 years of Democrat control in the Congress because of Republicans' awful 6 years. I don't think the American public are going to give them 6 years this time. If they screw it up, they're going to be out two or four.
Well, I kind of agree with that. And, you know, and really truthfully, they have been given a mandate of sorts. You know, I don't like the behind the closed doors, and here's why. Because Ted Cruz went public a couple of weeks ago around the same period you're talking about and said that he was not going to support Mitch McConnell for majority leader. He set the tone between the hardline Tea Parties, partiers, if you will, in Ted Cruz. You've got Justin Amash. They will follow Ted Cruz. You know, and that left Rand Paul kind of hanging there. And my personal belief, since this wasn't public, is that Rand Paul sided with Mitch behind closed doors because he needs Mitch's support for the presidency, which we talked about the other night. But this clearly is a mandate, because when you look at this poll, 53% want the Republicans to take the lead and control on the nation's agenda. Only 36% gave that same answer for Barack Obama. And if you look at the numbers, it's clear. You know, after the 2010 midterm, the Americans favored Republicans by an 8-point margin, but they didn't get control of the Senate. And when you look at the time of Bill Clinton's term in the 94 midterm, the Republicans had the largest advantage in that type of question at 9 points, and they've clearly doubled that with a 17-point lead over Obama. So this is going to be really, really interesting. 47% of the people don't think that that the GOP control will make any difference at all. And when you look at the leadership, I mean, let's face facts here. We pointed this out earlier this week as well. When you look at the leadership, you've still got the same four names. You've got John Boehner, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, and Harry Reid. A couple of the titles have changed from majority to minority, but you've still got the same four faces leading the party. And that could be a situation. Paul, you mentioned a second ago, you know, about the Keystone. Go ahead.
Sorry, I was going to say to that point, you know, you were mentioning the XL pipeline before. And the XL pipeline, I want to make sure everyone's clear. Congress hasn't changed over yet. We're still dealing with the same old folks that blocked XL for the last 6 years. Now, I personally am one that I question whether XL is a good policy or not. That's irrelevant. The point is that XL could have been passed any time in the last 6 years. The only reason it's being brought up now, the only reason is because of that Senate runoff. That is the only reason that that bill is moving forward. And I think that speaks specifically to the problems in Congress at this point, is that it is all about partisanship and elections and not about doing what's right. Statesmanship is dead. And that is what the American people want. They want answers. They want people who will stand up and lead. And Obama's shown that he will not stand up and lead. I think the 53% figure is a hope, a prayer that someone on the Republican side will stand up and lead.
Well, and that's it. You know, and Harry Reid has proven himself to be nothing but obstructionist, which is what me and Paul were pointing out a second ago. You're right. The Keystone Pipeline is only out there to try to save the last Democratic seat in the Senate that's up for grabs, and Senator Mary Landrieu. We know that it's partisan politics. There's no doubt about that. And for me, it just proves once again about the obstruction that was created by Harry Reid, because you're right, they did have 6 years. And it's also fascinating, though, when you look at this, you know, according to polls leading up to the election, there were two major factors that most people were concerned about. Number one was the economy. Everybody wants jobs. We're worried about the economy. And number two was security. Okay, well, now we have, you know, the Republicans are flat out going after the Keystone Pipeline. The minority Democratic Senate, or at least they will be in January, are scared to death to lose one more seat, so they're actually going to try to get credit with this for this before January. You know, so they're trying to address the economy, and they're only doing that because of the shift of power in partisan politics. So what are we going to do with security? That's another thing, because Obama has already announced now, we'll get into that in a few minutes, but I really want to touch on Obamacare before we get to that. But Obama has already announced that he's going to unveil a 10-part plan for overhauling the U.S. immigration policy that he's going to use executive action to do before the end of the year, and it may come as early as next Friday. So the Keystone Pipeline, whether we agree or disagree on whether it's good legislation or not, I personally like the Keystone Pipeline. But whether we would agree or disagree on it or not, at least it's finally going to get heard. So if nothing else, we've eliminated one piece of gridlock, and we attacked. You know, the Republicans have set the stage and said, hey, look, you said the economy was your number one issue. Now the Democrats have to respond because you gave them a mandate when you threw them out of office. So I think that's an interesting development. And the immigration thing, I'm not so sure about. But Ken, you mentioned yourself with the Obamacare. They gave away all their tools. They said that they're not going to rid Obama. They're not going to rid us of Obamacare. And they have already said, and Mitch McConnell and Rand Paul have already said, that they're not going to close down the government. Well, here's the thing. All of those statements were said prior to the last few days. In the last few days, as we all know by now, we have a gentleman by the name of Jonathan Gruber. Jonathan Gruber is a goober, if you will. I have no other way to put this. This guy got caught on tape over a year ago, you know, saying that they literally lied to us He was the architect or part of the architectural staff that created the Affordable Care Act. He sat with Barack Obama, and Barack Obama and him are the ones who came up with the Cadillac tax. Obama was hands-on involved in that. And he has been out on record for at least the fourth time today. We've got a new video for at least the fourth time today stating that they intentionally lied to the American people because we were too stupid to understand. He got caught on that a few days ago after the first time a video surfaced and an audio surfaced. And he tried to say he was just speaking off the cuff. You know, he probably should have used better words. You know, but that isn't who he is. Now we've got four instances. You know, a pattern of behavior emerges that this guy is that way. He detests the American people. And as far as I'm concerned, everybody that worked with him on this project do as well, including Nancy Pelosi. What makes it even funnier today is everybody is trying to run away and say that they've never heard of Jonathan Gruber. Nancy Pelosi says, I don't know who he is. He had nothing to do with anything we did. I haven't got a clue who he is, except for this.
Okay. We're not finished getting all of our reports back from CBO, but we'll have a side-by-side to compare. But our bill brings down rates. I don't know if you have seen Jonathan Gruber of MIT's analysis of the what the comparison is to the status quo versus what will happen in our bill for those.
You know, this is in 2010. She's bragging about the Gruber report and how his analysis. He's a trained MIT. He's an MIT economics professor, well known. He's also the one who crafted the Massachusetts Affordable Care Act that Mitt Romney takes credit for. You know, and now she's running saying she's never heard of this guy, and she's giving him all this credit. We've got documented, you can go to the Wayback Machine, I happen to capture that today, documented on the speaker.gov, her, the website where she was Speaker of the House back in 2009 and 10, using Jonathan Gruber's information to try to sell us on the Affordable Care Act. And she's also the one who said you have to pass it to see what's in it. With all of this in mind, here's where I'm going with this. With all of this in mind, the Supreme Court has now decided to listen to yet another case concerning Obamacare. And with now that we have a new Congress, we have proof that the president and his staff lied to the American people intentionally, knowingly, about the content of Obamacare so that he could push it through on us. Does this change the landscape as far as the Supreme Court ruling that Obamacare is legal as long as it's a tax? Paul. All right. Paul ain't there. Ken.
I don't think so. I think, you know, whether it's legal or not is a different question than whether or not it's good policy. I think that, in fact, that was actually written in the original ruling that there's a difference between policy and legality. And if you know, we've seen that even here in Kentucky Supreme Court rulings where it's like, well, it may be bad policy, but it's legal. If you don't like it, vote them out. I think the already there, and then you pour, it's almost like pouring salt in the wound of the Democrats. That you have these videos float out there that the guy who's one of the main architects for this thing is out publicly calling the American people stupid, you know, whatever. And I think that the reality is that he's actually telling the truth, and that's what hurts the most, because it's a moment of candor, right? It's a moment where he doesn't think he's broadcasting to the world. He doesn't think he's out, you know, broadcasting to the masses. He's talking to a specific audience, and so he's speaking with a certain amount of candor. And I think that he's right. I mean, you know, the Pelosi angle of it, let's be honest, Pelosi's a dumbass. So I don't think anything that comes out of her mouth is worth ever talking about, because anything she says is dumb. It's like that clip from Billy Madison where we're all dumber for having heard it. Horrible, anything she said. So putting her aside, you know, the reality is that people that question this law were right all along. You know, this bill had been kicked around. This idea had been kicked around for 20 years and had pretty much been definitively destroyed in the mid-90s. Yet he resurfaced this thing back, and it's still bad. what a surprise. We forced it through because they had a majority. They had the ability to cram stuff through. But I'll tell you, you know, the Democrats took a big beating on that, too. They burnt up all their political capital. They really haven't accomplished squat getting it through. And what did you get for it, right? You got a health care system that's still messed up. It's more broke. It's worse than it was. And that's what polls, the American people, the supposed morons, yeah, those people consistently agree the system's worse than it was. Put it back.
Oh, there's no doubt. It's worse than it was, and it's also more expensive. And it's really laughable because when we look at this in play, and you say nobody needs to listen to Nancy Pelosi, I agree with you. She is a dumbass. I won't deny that or argue that any time. You know, but the fascinating thing is that this is where the real problems are. Mainstream media refuses to talk about this story and play the remarks by Jonathan Gruber, play the lies by Nancy Pelosi, which is why Nancy Pelosi has always been able to maintain what power she has. Mainstream media is aiding and abetting the liberal left as usual. These things, this particular clip that I just played, and these stories about Gruber, believe it or not, these aren't news stories. These aren't news stories. Everything old becomes new again, because when you go back to 2009, 2010, and God, I hate to say this, I really do, because I'm no fan of the guy. But Rush Limbaugh is out there taking credit now for all of this stuff coming about, and quite frankly, maybe rightfully so. Limbaugh, you had The Blaze, you had Limbaugh, you had Breitbart, you had all of these alternate media sources that were putting all this out there for the last few years, including 2013, which is where these latest clips came from. You know, all of these people were putting them out there. They were ignored by mainstream media, so the mainstream majority never knew any of this when they go to vote. Now that the election is over, the Democrats got their ass handed to them. It's safe for a lot of people to go ahead and start talking about it. But still, the mainstream media, your ABCs, your CBSs, those guys are not talking about it. They are still aiding and abetting. It's interesting, too, because some of the stories that are coming out, when we get into this, if you go to CNN, CNN actually did something with this today. You know, they actually pointed, you know, the Gruber thing out today. But they had to go on with their story and try to act like it wasn't a big deal, because then they went on to say that the Obama administration and the efforts of the Obama administration has bent the cost curve. The cost curve has been working, and they're putting out the Obama administration talking points to say that since President Obama signed the Affordable Care Act, evidence says that we have bent the cost curve when it comes to health care. And, you know, that's according to Sylvia Matthews Burrell, the Department of Health and Human Services Secretary. You know, and across the board, we have now held down health care price inflation to the lowest rate in 50 years, which we know is not true. Paul just told us his example that his rates are going up 71% next year, and that is not uncommon. As a matter of fact, when we look at all of the things that have been going on with Obamacare, Obamacare is continuing to be an abysmal failure. We have, you know, some people, when we talk at this health insurance, you know, Obama was saying that they would have 13 million people this year, right? That were going to be signed up in 2015. Now they're adjusting that downwards and hoping they have a total of 9 million, you know, including everybody that's signed up now. But, all right, they haven't even kept the people they've had. That's how many people they've lost. The current number of people that have enrolled in Obamacare that they expected to be 13 million by the end of this signing period in 2015 dropped to 9 million because they lost 100,000 illegal immigrants, all right, that weren't eligible, and that's just the ones they admit to. So now we know the illegal immigrants are costing us a shitload in health care, right? We can prove it now. And then they lost a few million that weren't paying their insurance premiums because they were too damn expensive and they weren't really getting any coverage. Try to get a bronze plan. You're not getting anything with it. So it has proven to be a dismal failure. Go ahead, Ken.
But, hey, at least you know what? We've sent our very best to Washington to help them.
Well, that's debatable too, but yeah, we're going to have a great chance to see that, aren't we? Because in my opinion, we've clearly got, you know, when you have to do this whole majority leader speaker, and it was a foregone conclusion in a coronation of Mitch McConnell, you have to do this behind closed doors. That tells me that you've got an even worse rift between the new Republican Tea Party Libertarians and the old guard, like the guys on Mitch McConnell. You may even have a small rift, not a big one yet, when you get into Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Justin Amash. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say I wasn't talking about those guys. I was talking about Jerry. We've sent him up there. He's going to fix all the Obamacare sign-ups. That's what he's there to do.
I don't know. Jerry is there to go back to the inner city. This is what Jerry is supposed to do. And Abramson screwed that up in Louisville. Jerry Abramson was good at one thing, and I told people this for years and years and years. I told Jerry Abramson this on stage. He got red-faced and pissed off, and he couldn't respond because he had cameras on him, which is why I did it, because I love seeing him get all messed up because he can't handle it. But you know, I told Jerry on stage. I told him this during, you know, interviews and everything else. I told him during debates when we were both running for mayor. You know, Jerry can sell ice to an Eskimo. Problem is, he could go to deliver it in sub-Arctic temperatures, sub-zero temperatures in the Arctic, and it would be melted somehow. You know, he would lose half the volume. And that's the problem with Jerry. And that's what he did in Louisville. He was great at going into... Hang on. I've got the sneezes, folks. I totally apologize. But he was great at going into the inner city and convincing the poor urban core and the black community that he could deliver on all this stuff, and he never delivered. All right, and they bought it all the way up until the time we outed in an exclusive that he really thought that the problems of Louisville were because of poor, blacker, and older. He blamed all of Louisville's problems on poor, black, old people. And when he got caught on that, he didn't run again. He gave up his last term. And that's what he's supposed to do when he goes to Washington. He's supposed to go to these inner cities and sell them on all of this garbage with Obamacare and whatever else, just like you pointed out. He's supposed to go to Washington and sell all this garbage back to these inner cities who don't know any better. I'm not saying they're stupid. I'm saying they're uneducated. They haven't learned any better because they've become so dependent on the liberal left agenda that they don't know how to move forward without it. They have become dependent on the handout, and you never bite the hand that feeds you. I don't care who you are. And that's the situation we've got to overcome. So he's up there to make sure that Barack Obama gets to keep that situation in the inner city core. That's all he's there for, right or wrong?
Oh, you're absolutely right. No doubt about it.
Well, man, that's unreal. I hate being right all the time. It drives me nuts. Paul, you're back. Go ahead,
Paul.
Yes,
I know it bothers you being right more often than you're wrong, but that's just a burden you're going to have to carry, Ed. Jerry has never been a leader. Jerry here in the Louisville area, as a lot of people in the region know, Jerry is a cheerleader. He should be wearing a skirt rather than a coat and tie, because Jerry always ran away.
You're a homophobe.
There's a reason
I did that. Actually, I said that here a couple of years ago before Jerry finally decided not to run for his last term as mayor. And I use that same analogy that Jerry's a cheerleader. He should be in a skirt yelling rah-rah at a UofL game. And, of course, the whole gay community screamed and went crazy that I was a homophobe. And how dare I say Jerry should wear a skirt? What about the transgendered people? And everybody knows that Jerry's gay, which he is, you know, and all this other stuff. Hey, you know, and all I was doing was just trying to make an innocent thing like you just did. So it's just kind of comical to me. That's why I went there. But go ahead. I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
Well, Jerry has a long history of running away from anything difficult. And as you pointed out, the only reason he took this job is because he is going to be going into friendly confines on a recurring basis. He will not go to places where there's any degree of hostility toward Obama's policies. He's not going to do that. He can't handle that. Okay? So I think your analysis of that is right in the bullseye as to why he was elevated to the West Wing. And also, since you brought it up, there might be some additional reasons why he got elevated to the West Wing. If he's in the West Wing, he's within walking distance of the Big O, huh?
I'll let you guys research Larry Sinclair to find your answer to that one. yeah, I think there's a lot more than meets the eye. I think there's a lot behind the scenes, if you will. But you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's the thing. Jerry has never been a leader. He's been a salesman. You can have great salesmen that make lousy leaders. You know, and I'll be quite honest with you. If I had a product that I wanted to sell, all right, to the demographics that Jerry likes to sell to, I would have hired Abramson in a heartbeat to be a salesman, but I would never put him in charge of the warehouse. I would never put him in charge of delivery. I would let him go out and make the sales and bring me the sales slips. He would have to bring me the sales slips and bring me the check because I wouldn't trust him to get the check in the bank either. I wouldn't trust him to do anything more than to convince you to buy my product. At that point, I take over everything else or have whoever else take over that was responsible enough to handle it. That's Jerry. Jerry always could do sales. You got to give him credit for that. But you're right. He couldn't do delivery. And that's the thing. So we've got him. I'm kind of curious to see how quick he gets into inner city Detroit. I'm kind of curious to see how quick he goes to the inner city in Chicago. Is he going to go to the projects? No. You know, what's going to ultimately happen here is the same thing that always happens. Jerry's going to do the same thing that at the federal level that Barack Obama wants him to do that he did here in Louisville. He's going to meet with the so-called black pastors and everybody that has their hand out and pay them cash money to go out and lie on behalf of Barack Obama. That's what goes on here in Louisville. Cash money permeates. Cash money permeates the poorest communities right here in Louisville and the Black West End in Louisville, and that's what buys elections for Democrats. We've got it on record. This isn't me trying to start trouble, folks. I've got a complete CD with an hour of testimony from one of the people who do that, and the name is Denise Bentley. I've got a complete hour of testimony by Denise Bentley with the Kentucky State Police during a deposition regarding a campaign race she was involved in that happened heavily to. So I don't make these charges up because I'm some kind of a right-wing nut job that wants to throw out stuff without having any facts behind it. I've got it. So, and that's the whole thing. And, you know, that's Jerry's job, is to go out and buy the black pastors and buy the black leadership like your Al Sharptons and your Jesse Jacksons who don't do anything for the black people. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how that develops. And we'll know more about that one going forward in the next couple of months. Real quickly, guys, while you're on here, as I mentioned earlier, the two mandates that essentially were given by the American people to our Congress was to fix the economy and take care of security. We know that we're laughed at around the world. When we have a president who bows and capitulates to other so-called world leaders, we've got a problem. Russia just announced that they're going to start flying into the Gulf of Mexico and everything else. So now we're going to be on high alert constantly because Russia is now working with the Chinese to push their air dominance, if you will. We've got better planes and better pilots, and they knew better than to come around here. But we have become so weak in the world today that Russia and the Chinese have now gotten together and decided that they're going to test our limits and start flying into the Gulf of Mexico and other areas where we're supposed to basically be watching and have control. And instead of dealing with that threat, the first thing out of the president's mouth was that now he has unveiled a 10-part plan to overhaul our U.S. immigration policy. And he's going to do this policy via executive action. He's going to suspend deportations for millions of illegals. All of this stuff is supposed to start as early as next Friday, according to some sources within the White House. And I got this story from Fox News, so do what you want to with the source. I really don't care. But when we look at all of this, millions of people are now going to get Social Security numbers, government-issued IDs. They're going to get citizenship, all of these different things. So now they're going to all become legal. Now they're going to legally flood the workforce and the jobs and economy, okay? And things are just going to get worse. I don't get this. He's saying that that's his big issue. When we've got, essentially, in my opinion, a world crisis going on, and then we've got people out there like House Democratic Whip Steny Hoyer. Steny Hoyer says that, you know, he joins with his colleagues in urging the president to take these actions because we have to give immediate relief to families who are being wrenched apart and living in fear. That's like telling me that we have to give immediate relief to every murderer that's in prison because they're living in fear. They've been wrenched apart from society and living in fear. It's illegal to kill people. That's why you're in jail. There's this thing called laws. And for Steny Hoyer and the rest of this liberal left Democrats and President Obama thinking that he just needs to do this and it's going to give immediate relief to families living in fear, nobody is looking at why these people are living in fear in the first place. They're living in fear of being caught doing something wrong, which they've already done. But it's okay. We'll focus on that. Let Russia and China take over our skies. What do you guys think about that? The priorities here.
Well, I tend to agree with you that the priorities are very clear from the American people, that the economy is number one, which, you know, I keep hammering that they keep putting out these bogus numbers trying to convince everybody that the economy is all roses and rainbows. And, you know, everybody knows that's a load of crap, and that's what number one. As far as security is concerned, I think part of creature of the media. You know, the media has been trying to distract us. I think that Obama and the administration were trying to distract the American people from the fact the economy was bad. Just say, oh yeah, it's good. Now look over here. This is what's really going on. And I think that's a residual. The reality is, we haven't really had any sort of real attack on American soil that, and I tell people this all the time, unlike other countries, we actually have the ultimate defense against any sort of terrorist action, you know, and that's our Second Amendment. The only reason they got us the last time is because we were always trained, hey, you know, just go along, get along, and they'll let you go. Yeah, we're not going to do that anymore, so I don't think that that's going to be really a problem. But that said, I do think that it's important to convey a strong presence as far as you can't just beat up on us and we're going to walk away. I personally think that the country's best response, if you screw with us, we're going to come back. It's not going to be an equal response like the UN likes to put out there. It needs to be equal response. It needs to be a fair war. Well, no, you screwed with us. You took our attention away from something else that we thought was important. We're going to teach you a lesson and you're not going to do it again. And that's the way it has to be. And you only have to do that two or three times, right? I use the example of when my kids were growing up. I only had to spank my son like three times. And then from then on, it was like, hey, do this or else, right? Never had to do it again. Because once you show that you're going to follow through with the threat, all you have to do is say, listen, don't do that. And people go, oh, yeah, hey, those guys, don't mess with that. That's the type of policy we have to have, and not one of going out and taking over everything, but one of being serious. So if somebody's going to mess with us, they know that the full weight of the ramifications are going to come down on them, and they're going to think twice about it before they do it.
Well, I would hope you're right, Paul.
I think that you are extrapolating a little bit too much as to what's going to happen just because Obama says so. Obama has had the opportunity to do this executive action thing on illegals for 6 years now. He hasn't done it. He hasn't done it. Okay. So the question is, what on earth would provoke him to do it now? What could he possibly gain out of it? And the answer is, I'm not sure that he has anything to gain. So then the question for in my mind becomes, since he has behaved as a petulant child for almost all six of those years, and as you have pointed out in on your previous shows, he really doesn't have anything to lose, will he act in that way just to spite all of us? All of us. And I think we're going to have to wait and see what that answer is. But I believe that should he behave as the petulant child that he actually is, I believe that there will be some major consequences from some middle of the road Democrats. Remember, the Senate it will be no more than six senators away from being able to override any veto. And if he pisses off six Democrat moderates who have a strong love for our way of life, that's not outside the realm of possibility that they would come over and join the Republicans to override whatever kinds of vetoes he might issue. And once they override it, that issue is decided. So I'm not as pessimistic about that. I think that look, Mary Landrieu, you brought up Mary Landrieu, okay? Mary Landrieu is already feeling the heat. She has been a rock rib, staunch, dyed-in-the-wool Democrat all during these 6 years. She's feeling the heat. A whole bunch of other Democrats around the nation are going to be going home on December 31st for the last time because they didn't get reelected. okay? So I really think that the Democrats are feeling all kinds of heat, and I'm not as concerned about Obama doing whatever Obama thinks he wants to do, because I believe the Republicans will be able to get enough Democrats to come on board to override vetoes. I really do.
Well, that's very possible. For me, you know, I look at it just a little bit different than that. I think he will do it. And the petulant child is part of it, but the other part of it is for the last 6 years he's had a Democratic Senate in the hopes of being able to get a Democratic House where he could run the gamut. Last Tuesday's elections, losing the Senate, is a great concern. There is no way he can make this happen now unless he chooses executive action. And quite frankly, you know, for the last couple of days there's been a lot of talk that the Democrats lost these elections because they didn't have the voter turnout that they normally have. And I tell you, not to sound like some kind of conspiracy theorist, although I do go down that road on occasion, admittedly, let's think about why. In this election, you had Project Veritas out there getting videotape of fraudulent election activity. Everything in the world was being put out there publicly. It became a lot harder for Democrats to have, you know, dead people and zombies voting. It became a lot harder for Democrats to go out and steal these absentee ballots out of trash cans and fill them out. You know, it became a lot harder. Is that where those votes normally come from? We'll never know. But it is interesting. So at this point, the only thing I can figure is that he does this because it's the only way he has to do this, and at the very least, it will get a few million more Democratic voters in 2016 that are going to aid, you know, the liberal left agenda. It sounds like conspiracy, but if there's a reason for it, I would say that's it. Paul and Ken, thank you so much for your phone calls. I appreciate it, gentlemen. I really, really do. You know, we come to the end of the hour, so what does this do for us? Well, I tell you, hopefully we've given you something to think about. Hopefully. I always say hopefully because you never know. As much as we take offense at people like Jonathan Gruber stating over and over about Obamacare that they did this because the American people were too stupid to understand it, quite frankly, it's disgusting that our political leaders think so little of us. But what's more disgusting is the fact that we have built a situation where they've been given the opportunity to think so little of us. That's the reality of the world we live in. We have continued to elect these people, and every one of these guys, I don't care which side of the coin you're on, Republican or Democrat, have in one way or another abused the trust that we have given them. They have abused what we expected them to do when elected. So in a sense, like it or not, Jonathan Gruber's comments may be offensive, but for each of us, we should be more offended by the fact that we don't do what we're supposed to do. We don't vet our candidates. Now, there are people out there that do. Our good friend Kim Moman, I do. Mr. Holliger, who is with us, you know, a lot of us do that. But as a whole, as a society, you will find, even here in Kentucky, the last number I had was 40% of everybody who voted Democrat voted straight party ticket because they could not stand the fact of voting for a Republican. That's the real concern. That's the real concern, that you don't care who the candidate is, you just care that they have this D or their R behind their name, then you haven't done your due diligence. You haven't done your work to identify the candidate and make sure that that candidate was understood before you gave them the power to make decisions for you. So Gruber might be wrong in telling us that we're stupid, but perhaps we need to start waking up a little bit and realizing maybe we're not stupid, maybe we're uneducated, and if we started educating ourselves on who we elect, maybe we'll move things along. That's where the real tragedy is, and that's what we need to work on. And I have to leave you guys with this. The Democratic Party right now is in a free fall. I don't think there's any doubt about that anywhere across the nation. Since last Tuesday, you have seen the Democrats scrambling, trying to save one seat, such as Senator Mary Landrieu in Louisiana. Now you see Barack Obama scrambling, trying to tell us that he's going to enact these changes through executive action to make legal millions of illegal immigrants, ignoring what he was told last week in the elections that we were worried about security, because, folks, that does affect our security. We have the Russians invading our airspace. We have China going into airspace, not necessarily our airspace, but getting close enough to cause us a lot of concern because we haven't stood up as a strong nation, as our good friend Ken Molman pointed out. There's a lot of things here, but the Democrats are scared. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. Have a great night, folks. We'll see you next week. Don't forget
afraid.
Our good friends, Ken Molman, on Sunday.
Of us. You're afraid of change. I don't know the future. I didn't come here to tell you how this is going to end. I came here to tell you how it's going to begin. I'm going to hang up this phone, and then I'm going to show these people what you don't want them to see. I'm going to show them a world without you.